right, we are back at Cracks in Postmodernity. Today we have a very special guest, Andrew Boriga, who is the author of Victim, a novel which just came out last week.
That's right.
Okay, so we've been promoting this book for a couple weeks now. I had my review in Critic, reviews in Compact, even in the New York Times this week, right?
Yes, this week, yeah.
Awesome. So, Andrew, let's start with just give us a little bit of a synopsis of the book for those who aren't familiar. What's the story and what inspired it?
Thank you, man. And first, just thank you for having me and for showing the love to the book, man, for real. I really do appreciate it. So the synopsis is about this kid, Javi, who basically wants to be a successful writer. That's his dream. And he sort of realizes pretty early on that if he pimps out his traumatic background for white editors, that he'll make that dream happen for him a lot faster. And so he sort of starts to go down that path and then gets a little carried away with it at the end, kind of has a come into grips with like who he is and what he's actually done, and you know, has it all been worth it, I guess, in the end. So also a bit of a coming of age story, a friendship story. Inspiration wise, I started writing it about 10 years ago, so that was really trying to write this friendship story between these two friends who grew up in the same neighborhood and then just took drastically different paths in life. And that was based on just my own background, having grown up in the Bronx and then gone to like Cornell and written for New York Times and New Yorker and other places like that, and just wondering like how the hell did I get there, and then friends of mine ended up in jail or addicted to drugs and stuff, and you know, dealing with all that. But then slowly the novel morphed the more and more that I was working on it and I was growing as a person working in the media, and started to get these opportunities in the media where people were kind of like giving me stories to do, but they were, you know, yeah, well, he's got some food coming in. No, thank you. And you got some real food, man. So yeah, I mean, it just changed as I was like kind of living Javi's story a little bit, where people were giving me these opportunities to write, but it was always like, write about your background or like write about these like really traumatic things. And at first I thought it was important to do that, and I still think it was, but I did start to feel pigeonholed. And I realized a lot of writers of color in this era of 2015, 2016, 17, 18, were feeling the same way. Like when we talk about it, they'd be like, this is all we can get. These like, you know, race beat or the like trauma beat, the poverty porn beat. And so I just felt like I wanted to write about that. And I landed on Javi being like the alternative version of me who like was getting these opportunities, but instead of me where I kind of like started backing away and just like, I was like, I felt icky about it. He's like, nah, this is, I'm going to capitalize on this and like give them what they want. And that just kind of felt like a fun story and a way to like talk about all these things, but without being heavy handed or like try to like make an argument necessarily, because I don't really have like an argument necessarily, but just to be like, what is this? What are we doing here? You know, and try to package that in like a fun story that has that, but also the friendship story at its core that I always started with. So,
yeah, and I mean, so I want to get into the characters in a second, because I think this is what's most interesting about the novel. But I mean, we do have to talk about the polemics surrounding it, because I mean, as I wrote in my review in The Critic, like, this does in some ways challenge the current status quo about, I don't know, like all these ideals about, you know, social justice, representation, et cetera, talking about people's trauma, people's very real oppression. But that's kind of become a meme at this point. Yeah. That's people are taking less and less seriously. Mm-hmm. But you're not really, you have no agenda. Now, you're exploring these realities because, again, they're part of your life. They're part of many people's lives. But you're not trying to say, like, oh, this is all BS.
Right.
Neither are you trying to say, oh, but you have to believe all these things. It's just like, okay, we're human beings. We're caught up in this, I don't know, this kind of messed up world.
Yeah.
How do I navigate as a human, as a person, with very real relationships, with friendships, which are complicated?
Yeah.
But the fact that you started working on this, like, 10 years ago, things were very different back then.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is before COVID. This is before, you know, the defund movement, BLM, and all that. And now we're at a point where not only is your story out, like you have movies like American Fiction that just came out that's kind of challenging the status quo. So if you look back 10 years ago, I don't know, like how has it changed over these 10 years? Yeah. Like what has that been like for you?
It's been a pretty drastic change, man. I think when I first started writing about this, I had very like early inklings of some of these trends because I was at Cornell and like it was a space where obviously elitist space, but also where diversity is celebrated. But it was like, I don't know, it was like an odd thing because they just take all these kids of color and like you bunch them together and like we have diversity, but then you'd hang out around them and it's like we were such varying degrees of like status and class and like background. And so like I think my first understanding of some of these intricacies was like being at, like diversity kid at Cornell and but being like but you're rich though, like yeah. you know, like yeah. which is fine, but like they would make it seem like we're all just one group and we all think the same and act the same. And it's like, well, like okay, that kid is Puerto Rican, but he's like Puerto Rican from the island and with a lot of money and he goes like boating, and I'm like New Yorker from the Bronx. We're not exactly like the same, you know, but there was just like broad brush that we were being painted with. And so that was like pretty early where that I was just thinking about that stuff. But I think what was most interesting was to watch like the wave of diversity, like being championed in literature and media happen when I graduated, like 2014 or so, where all of a sudden like everyone was like, we want diverse voices. And it was like, that's dope, like I'm happy that it was great, you know. But then it was like, we want diverse voices who are going to say certain things, you know, or like we want these certain stories. And and so it was like this weird, it was a mix of like being excited and then slowly being like is disappointed or being or just like looking at it skeptically, like what do you really want it, or do you want like the trendy version of it, and are we just going to be discarded when this is not like popular anymore, you know. And I felt that a lot with, you know, like in 2020, for example, I was actually happy that there was finally like a moment where I feel like the whole country agreed, like okay, we need like reform in the police, right? We need to change some things. And everyone's posting their black squares and everything. But then it's like, again, it just like fractured. And I felt like we never passed anything real, you know, like no like significant change happened when we had this final moment where everyone's in agreement. And I think it's because like people started using it for their own agenda. It was like, you know, pushing it way too far, and like we're gonna like disband entire police forces. Yeah. And it's like, well, wait a minute, like we do need, you know. And then other people were being like, oh, that's stupid, like, you know, the woke left is gonna ruin this country. And it just like fractured again. And so it was like, I don't know, there's been these waves from this period where like I feel we've had moments where we're like, we're gonna all agree that we should do something for good, and then it kind of gets co-opted by people, and it's like, it's just been annoying to watch. And I don't know, I just felt like I had a lot of thoughts about it, but I didn't want to write like an essay. I wanted to like try to get out some of these things through characters who felt real, you know, and authentic.
Yeah, I mean, we have enough think pieces on, exactly. like, what's yeah, right
like, I don't
wrong.
Want another fucking think piece. Right. Like, yeah. Oh, my God. Oh. Ritzel, I can't even read them anymore, honestly. Yeah. Like, I'm I see the headlines, and I click, and I'm like, I can't. I'm like, okay, we're going to talk about defund the police. We're going to talk about these things. I'm like, all right, I'm not, you know, I just feel like there's just so many. There's nothing original to contribute in that form, yeah. I think, at least.
Yeah, no, and I mean, what's, for me, is so valuable about the story is that, again, you're not taking a side, you're not arguing for something, you're looking at, again, human nature, like what happens to someone who's in these circumstances, who's in the middle of these conversations about very big social issues, what does it do to them as an individual?
Yeah.
You know, like people are not black and white, I mean,
right,
pardon
exactly.
the pun, but like the fact that Javi, that he's coming from the Bronx, like he's, you know, coming from an underprivileged background, we could say. And then he goes to this, you know, this elite school where he meets other people of color, but many of whom are very much privileged.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that, again, they don't experience some barriers.
Sure, yeah.
But he has a very particular experience, which is different from theirs. And I think that's something that very easily gets lost in this kind of discourse about identity, that sure, there is skin color, there is identity on the surface, but there's also socioeconomic factors. There's also cultural differences, because you know, you have people growing up in the suburbs who have a lot of money, right, like his eventual girlfriend, which is totally different from Javi growing up in the Bronx. Yeah. But again, like, as much as you said, like, there need to be these big conversations about police reforms, about, you know, representation, access to certain opportunities. But what often gets evaded is the question of, okay, but who am I as a person and how am I living my life? I mean, if I choose to kind of play this victim card, to the point that I don't actually have integrity in my work, like I don't take my work seriously, like what does that do to my character? And I think that's what's most fascinating. You really explore the, like, the moral conundrums that someone in this situation finds themselves in. You know, so we'll talk a little bit more about that later on, but I do want to get into these characters because, you know, there's so much depth to them. Let's start with Anais. So this is the girlfriend who, again, is, she's mixed race, mm-hmm, from suburbs of upstate Albany. Yeah, Albany. Yeah, yeah. Dad is a police officer. Uh-huh. Dad is Puerto Rican.
He's Puerto Rican. Yeah. From the Bronx.
So
Puerto Rican and Dominican.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, where did this character come from? What inspired her?
Yeah, she's a mix of people that I met at Cornell, I think. And, you know, and also, like, after that. But just, like, I don't know. There were these types that were, you know, like, they got on campus. And because, again, we were being grouped together as these, like, POCs or diversity students, they kind of, like, saw an opportunity to, like, make a name for themselves, almost, you know, by standing up for certain things and, you know, being a, like, this sort of campus activist. Not to say that there weren't some who were for real about what they were doing, but I don't know, I did get the sense that some of it was also like, I'm gonna do these things because it's gonna look good on my resume when I get out of here and I go get whatever, like, corporate job I'm gonna get or whatever, you know, I'm leading these boards and so on and so forth. And so there was a bit of that, but also just, like, people that I've, like, met or interacted with or just read about that, like, you know, like someone like, what's this guy's name? Sean, he changes his background, like, every 2 years and gets in trouble for, like, defrauding people. I forgot his name. He got in trouble again recently. But, you know, like, these people who are, like, riding these, like, waves of activism, but then you, like, they look into them and it's like, oh, okay, they never gave that money to the people, or they never actually did these things that they said they were going to do. You know, so, like, she was a way to kind of get at that. But also the various classes of people that I was talking about, like, at Cornell, at a place like that, where it's like, on the surface level, okay, she's Latina, she's, you know, Puerto Rican, Dominican, person of color, but, like, in a lot of other ways, she, like, aligns very, very much the same as, like, the kind of wealthier white kids on campus. She has more in common with them, almost. And, like, that's the experience of a lot of people. And, like, I wanted to explore that as well. So I tried to be, like, generous with her, too, you know, and not just make her, like, a flat, like, social justice warrior character or whatever, but, like, a fully rounded person that you can kind of understand her.
Yeah.
Because she does believe in a lot of these things, but she's also, like, you know, she comes from a certain background and she wants to make sure she keeps that background, right? So when they move to New York together, she don't want to live in the Bronx because it's a little too dirty for her. It's a little, like, too under her. She wants to live in, like, a nice area in Brooklyn, right? And it's like, and Javi kind of calls her out. It's like, does that clash with your, like, you know, stated goals for being amongst community and building community and helping people, you know, less fortunate than you? And I don't know if it, like, you know, these are, like, moral conundrums that I think people have, right? Like, I think even if you're from New York and you grew up with a background like I did and you make, you know, you get a nice job, you make money, and it's like, if I move to, like, the poppin', like, Brooklyn area, am I a gentrifier now? Or, like, you know, like, you don't, you know, it's, like, hard to answer that. And so I wanted to explore that with someone like Anaïs. And so she was a really fun character to write and like develop, and really, I spent a long time like trying to make her like a really fully well-rounded character.
Yeah. And what's like, it could have been very easy to just paint her in this really like simplistic light as the dumb SJW who's really flat, right, and it's overly idealistic and unaware of her privilege. And I think like that's, I don't know, like that's the risk with what you were saying before, like people who are overly reactionary, people who like totally dismiss all the quote unquote like woke stuff.
Yeah.
Because yeah, like they see the real pitfalls in it, but don't acknowledge that, well, okay, we still need to have these conversations. Right. Just because some people are stupid about it,
right,
doesn't mean it's not worth talking about. And I think you're pretty charitable to her. Like, you show that she has good intentions. Yeah. Like, she's very idealistic. That's great. That's commendable.
Yeah.
And that it's hard for her to confront the fact that, like, she has this... I mean, I feel bad for her because she has this disconnect. She knows she's Latina, but she's growing up in the burbs.
Right.
And she, like, doesn't feel connected to her people.
Yeah.
You know? So when she has this conflict about, like, do I live in the Bronx? Do I live in gentrified Brooklyn? We could easily make fun of her and like be like, see, you thought you were so down and now you're like, oh, you're this princess.
Right.
But that's like, that's a hard thing to confront. Yeah. So like, you really give justice to the fact that these are people really sorting through important questions about moral character, about identity, you know. Well, let's get into Gio though, because this is, I mean, I think this is really the big theme of the book that gets lost in the polemics, that like this friendship. Well, tell us a little bit about Gio, and again, like, what inspired this?
Yeah, Gio is a really important character to the book, and he's somebody that was always there from the beginning. Like, it was Javi and Gio. Like I said, I try to write this friendship story, and he, you know, to me, he's like important because he represents the like grounding presence for Javi to like pull him back into reality. You know, he's someone who's just like just living day by day, and he's been dealt a really shitty hand, but he's just like, I'm gonna fucking figure out a way. You know, he's just like a lot of people that I know, that, you know, they're gonna figure it out by any means, and his means, he's gonna join a gang, he sells drugs, he gets locked up in prison, gets out. But even when he gets out, you know, and Javi's like trying to convince him, like, hey, like, I'm riding this like victim wave, you can get on it too, your story's better than mine. Like, he's like, you know, he's very concerned with just realistic things. Like, I just need a job, man. I need an apartment. I'm trying to rebuild my life. Like, this online discourse that you're infatuated with is just weird, and it's like so disconnected from reality. And so, to me, he's really important because he's like, I always wanted him to be like the voice of reason, you know, and it was a way for me to like pay homage to like the people in my life who were like very disconnected from like the literary media world and like all these terms and like who wouldn't even know what like SJW means or whatever, who I feel like really are like the majority of our country. Like, I feel like that's, you know what I mean? Like Twitter and all this, it's like such a tiny subsect of the country. And so with Gio, I try to have a character who was like representative of that, but like the Bronx version, you know. So I loved writing him, and like, you know, I think a lot of people have pointed out that the funniest parts of the book are like his dialogue with Javi and how he just kind of like makes fun of him and like, you know, sort of nudges him back down to like reality.
Okay. Okay, we're back. We took a little lunch break, and we just want to give a shout out to Black Forest in
Black Forest, Brooklyn,
for hosting us, for having a delicious lunch. But we were talking about Gio, Javi's best friend, childhood friend, and how he kind of... he challenges Javi to, I don't know, like, to really look at how real he is, or how not real he has become, ever since he starts to make it as a writer. I mean, it's, there are a lot of these funny scenes where Javi's really, you know, puffed up about, I wrote this piece about this really important issue, and he wants Gio's approval. Mm-hmm. Like, Gio, who just got out of jail, was involved in gangs. And Gio is just like, yeah, honestly, it's like, what are you doing? Like, this is kind of ridiculous. So yeah, like to see this back and forth between the two of them is interesting. And as you were saying before, you see like, okay, he goes down this different path in life. And Javi kind of gives him the usual spiel of like, oh, you're the product of a messed up system. It's not your fault. And he's like, look, the system may be messed up, but I chose to go down this path. And I think it's, again, like it cuts past this polemic one side versus the other, because sure, the system is stacked against some people. Some people are more likely to get involved in crime. But at the end of the day, you do kind of have a choice. So it's, again, it's not black and white. So let's talk about that, like that moral conflict that unfolds between their conversations.
I mean, honestly, a lot of that was based off of when I taught in prison. I taught creative writing in a prison, like a couple years, this prison in Miami, out in the Everglades. And, you know, it was like 30 guys. I probably taught like three or four classes, about 30 guys each class. And, you know, like they were writing poetry, stories, things. We were having conversations about like, you know, these people, some people for life, you know, been locked up young. And it's like, I just, the stories that they were writing and the things that they were like, it was not kind of what you were hearing on like Twitter or whatever. Right. It was kind of like, it was a broad spectrum of people. And for the most part though, they were trying to like, they had been there for a while and they were just like, all right, we're here and I'm trying to like better myself, you know? And they were, and some of them told me flat out, like, yeah, I did bad things. You know what I mean? Like they kind of like owned up to it. You know what I mean? And I don't know. It was just so much more nuanced than like what you would expect, you know? And it was also just from my family. Like I've had family members, you know, be locked up for various things, you know, violence or drugs, and like, they'll tell you like, yeah, I was kind of wild. I should have did that, you know. Like I know better now, you know. They don't kind of just like blame the system right away. They will say like, oh, you know, I wish I had a teacher. Like there's like a give and take. You know, it's not just like this blanket like it's their fault, it's the man's fault that this happened to me. It's like, no, like I probably shouldn't have stabbed that guy, but you know, but I was really angry or whatever. You know, I got carried away or whatever, and so it was just like, I don't know, that felt important to capture that, because that's what I would hear from people who actually have been locked up and or were when I was teaching, you know, like this mix of like being angry at the environment maybe that they were like raised in or the structural issues and being cognizant of it, for some of them, but also being like, okay, I got to take responsibility for what I did, and like, while I'm here, I'm taking these classes, you know, I'm trying to like better myself. I'm trying to like, you know, read books in the library. And like, you know, they were, I love teaching those guys. They were the most like, it was weird because I was teaching at University of Miami in the daytime and then driving to the Everglades to teach in this prison. And like the guys in the prison were like so much more hungry to learn, man. They were just like, that was my favorite class to teach. I loved it. You know, they were like, I never had to like beg people to raise their hands. I had to like tell some of them like, I need to move on now. You know, like they were just, they were dying to learn, and I never asked them what they did. I just treated them like students, you know, and they, I think, appreciated that so much. And so, you know, but then I had like these UM kids who were like, they were cool, but they were like, you know, they drove Porsches and like, they were just like, like they didn't really want to be there. They were trying to get an easy A or whatever. So, so I don't know, man, like that experience really informed a lot of Gio. And also, like I said, family and friends, you know, just like having actual conversations with them, like, how do you feel? And it's like, a lot of times it's like, you know, I got caught up and now I gotta fix things, you know, hopefully. Or some of them don't, you know, they don't learn. It's maybe like doing a little bit is not a big deal for them, you know? So it's like, this is varying perspectives on that system that I felt like I wanted to touch on, and through Gio, you know, so that was a big inspiration for that, for all that.
And I want to get into how like Gio really holds him accountable, because number one, he's known him his whole life. Like, they grew up together. But also, like, he's been through it. Like, he's had to ask real questions about what have I done with my life? What mistakes have I made? And he can't afford to go into these kind of, like, abstract ideals about, like, justice and society. Like, no, it's like you got to look at yourself in the mirror and be like, what am I really doing with my life? Yeah. So he really has that... like, he's really bold and challenging Javi to ask, like, again, what am I doing when I'm publishing this stuff? Do I really have a noble intention behind it, or is there something very self-serving?
Right.
And I think I mentioned this in the review. I don't know if you've read Christopher Lash at all, Culture of Narcissism. No. So basically his thesis is that, like, I don't know, like after all the cultural revolutions in the 60s, like, a lot of people who were concerned about actual social justice kind of turned it into a way for them to kind of gratify their narcissistic, like, look at me, I'm fighting for what's right. Mm-hmm. And that's, I don't know, like, that's a lot of people's critique today, that SJWs are really just looking for attention.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it's a very easy cop-out. Like, it's very easy to be like, oh, these issues are bullshit because these kids just want attention. And it's like, mm-hmm. I said before, no, like, these are real issues.
Right.
But we have to be real about the fact that just because you're pursuing some noble cause doesn't mean you're using it to gratify something kind of selfish in you. And again, it's Gio who has that really, has that authority to really be like, look, like, what is this for? Is this for something truly good, or is it just because you feel insecure and you want attention, you want to feel better about yourself? That question of moral character, again, is, it's more complicated than we'd like it to be, but I feel like you give a lot of space to Javi to be like, yeah, maybe I'm kind of being a piece of shit right now. Maybe I'm just an asshole. So, like, let's talk about that. Like, how do you, I don't know, what was that like trying to give him that space to come to terms with the fact that, yeah, he was kind of a dick for a while?
Yeah. I mean, I just felt that capturing that struggle was important. You know, that internal struggle, because I think you said it really well. Like, there are, like, even people who are trying to do it for noble reasons, you know, nowadays, I think with social media, like, it comes with all this attention. If you're successful at it, you get turned into a brand, you know? Like, I mean, you see, like, Colin Kaepernick is, like, he's doing, like, ads and stuff now and, like, getting these sponsorship deals, and it's like, so it's like, there's a struggle of, like, what am I doing? Is this for good, or is this for me? Or, like, and if it is for good, but it turns out being for me, is that okay? You know, like, and so I wanted to paint all that, because that's stuff that I would think about, too, when I would get these opportunities, you know? Like, I wrote about, like, Hurricane Maria, I remember, in Puerto Rico for The New Yorker, and I had a lot of struggle about that, because I was like, am I the right Puerto Rican to write this story? You know, like, am I Puerto Rican enough? I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, my Spanish isn't that great. Like, it's okay, you know. And I've been to Puerto Rico a lot as a kid, but, like, I'm not there. I don't live there. You know what I mean? So I wrestle with a lot of those things. And I think whenever I take on, like, especially like a nonfiction piece where I'm going to sound like authoritative in some way, I think about that a lot. And I can't say there's ever any like easy conclusion to it or easy answer. I'm usually conflicted, but I will say yes if I don't feel like the conflicted part is like outweighing the other part where I feel like I should do it. But it's always there, you know. It's like, even when I write about the Bronx, as much as I live there and like I love it, I know it, like, I still am like, there's people who know it a lot better than I do. And so, you know, it's just, it's something that I think writers in particular probably, I hope, grapple with, you know. And so, you know, I wanted Javi to sort of do some of that. But even though I did make him a lot more like cynical and like success hungry, perhaps, than like I was, I still wanted him to like feel like a real person, you know, not just be, I really just tried not to write like cutout characters, you know. I wanted you to really feel like these were real people, and even though he's doing shitty things, like, he is conflicted about it. And he feels that in his mind, though, he's still doing it for the right reasons until he kind of realizes he's not.
Yeah, and I mean, it's sad to me that I think a lot of people like look past this theme in the book, because again, like, you're hitting on these hot button issues. But really what's most fascinating is that what brings Javi back to himself is this lifelong friendship that, you know, Gio sticks with him even when he is a total asshole. Like, there's this sense of fidelity. And it makes me think, so someone we've had on the podcast several times, Tara Isabella Burton, she writes fiction, nonfiction. But in her latest nonfiction book, she wrote about how, like, I don't know, like in the modern era, we have this sense of like the self-made person. Mm-hmm. I invent my identity. I project it out onto the world.
Yeah.
And that could be something very liberating because, like, you define who you are on your own terms. But then it could also get out of hand. Like, you can start to define yourself by things that, like, I don't know, like, that get you hype for its own sake, that just get you attention, even if it's meaningless or something bad. And she was saying, basically, I don't know, like, what's happening in this relationship, that it's committed friendships, family relations, mm-hmm. that will bring you back to your true self.
Yeah.
While you're exploring who you are, your identity, especially for writers, like, without those friendships, without someone who's really going to be like, okay, but who are you really? What are you living for? There's nothing that's gonna, like, I don't know, like, we're not truly free then, you know? And I think that's what's most satisfying by the end of the book, that there's someone who's able to, like, bring him back to these real questions. So, I don't know, like, I'm curious, especially for you as a writer, who, like, you're exploring a lot of big questions about your own life, about the society you grew up in. As you started to get published more, as you started to get more success, who are the people who would, like, bring you back to yourself, who weren't afraid to challenge you, maybe if you were going in a certain direction, maybe wasn't the best?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like you were saying, those family relationships, you know, my mother, my wife, my best friends, you know, from high school, who've, like, they've known me since before all this stuff happened, and so, I don't know, like, it's... I think because I've always been close to them, these, not just my friends, but my mom, you know, people like my wife and stuff, who's, I mean, we've been together for like 10 years, so she's seen me grow too. So, like, I think having those people in my circle and being close to them, and, like, I know I'm going to see them, I can't, like, front, you know, on the page, you know, because, like, they're going to read it eventually and they're going to be like, eh. I guess that was okay. That was a little weird. Why'd you say it like that? Or why'd you write this thing like that? You know, so, like, I felt I wanted to, like, hit at that because for me, that's always been, like, a grounding. These people are grounding presence, even though they're not at all, like, engaged in this literary world or whatever, media hyper-obsessed world. You know, they're just living regular lives, you know, like some of them, they're teachers in schools, a couple of them are cops, a couple of them are like, one of them is like a, you know, successful, like he's finance kind of person, but he grew up in the projects, you know, like they have these very varied backgrounds. And, you know, it's important to, like, have people like that in your orbit, I think. You know, I think a lot of, I guess writing this, I was thinking a lot about people who are my age or younger, right? I have younger sisters, they're 27, and they're, you know, people their age who are, like, so obsessed with, like, these social media apps and, like, getting followings on there and, like, building their brand. And it's like, you know, like, to some extent, I understand you have to do that. Like, I post on Instagram or whatever, right? But also, like, I guess don't lose sight of the people who actually know you, you know? Like, that's... in many ways, I think, more important than the people who, like, follow you. Like, I don't even know what a follower means. You know what I mean? Like, you just see your stuff online. Okay, but, like, who are your... like, I hope you still have, like, real friends who can, like, who know you and can build you up and also kind of pull you back when you start acting a little weird, you know, or like, acting outside, doing things that are not yourself, you know? And so that was a big theme to hit in the book. And I'm really glad you pulled that out because it's... I think you're right. It's something that... you know, with the flap copy and everything, it kind of gets lost. But it's, to me, that was very important. It's the core of the story.
Yeah, and I think, at least for me personally, I need people who are not, I need friends who are not involved in the literary world at all, sure. Because like I need people who don't give a shit that I got published in whatever, like, okay, what's that? I never heard of this magazine. That's not interesting to me. But I also need friends who, again, who aren't involved in the literary world, but who will read my stuff and be like, yeah, this was kind of dumb, or this was like, this didn't say anything. Have you ever had a friend though who like really, really pushed you or really challenged you to reevaluate something you wrote?
I would say my mother probably. Like my mother is like, whenever I did write about my background for like publications, she'd always be like, but like it wasn't that bad, or like, you know, you didn't have to say it like that, you made it sound so bad, you know. And to some extent I think it was a perspective thing, because like she had a different perspective than me on the situation. But in other ways, like her saying things like that has made me more cognizant, like, okay, like, you know, even though the editor maybe wants me to write it in this more grittier fashion, like I need to do my best to like retain something that not just going to get her approval, because like she's the type of person who's going to have things to say, but feels like it's closer to whatever authentic is, you know. I don't know if it's like a place you can reach totally, but like get closer to it, you know. And it just, you know, I have her voice in my mind, so I'm like writing something, I'm like, all right, like if she reads this, she's gonna be like completely you know, upset about how much the, like what this depiction is or whatever. I don't know, like just like knowing that people like her are gonna read stuff that I write, just kind of, it keeps me more honest to myself, you know. And I don't know, again, I don't think it's like a sort of set place that you can reach, because you are writing a story, you're posturing nonetheless, you're writing something, right? But you know, I think just think they help you drive you closer to the core. So
I mean, my problem with my parents is like either the stuff I write is too long for them because they have short attention spans, or like, because some pieces I write are like, I use too much like niche internet discourse, and they're like, I have no idea what you're talking about. But no, so on the other hand though, I'm wondering, like, do you like, have you ever had to draw the line between family and friends who are like really challenging you to keep it real versus like people who are just haters, people who are just maybe a little jealous that you're making it?
Not really, honestly. And to be fair, like I can't say that my friends are like constantly challenging me, or my mother even, because she's the same way. Like she won't read everything I write, and if it's like, she clicks on it super long, she's like, oh, okay. Like, she'll share it, but be like, you know, I'll read it later. And like, you know, so it's like, I don't know. Like, not really, because like haters, I haven't really had, like, I don't know.
Maybe you just don't know.
Maybe I don't know. Yeah. Like, I myself stay away from the discourse too. You know what I mean? I try to like engage with it as little as possible, especially nowadays. So even to me, some of these terms, I don't really know what they are either, you know. And I feel like that's important. Like I kind of love living in Miami as a writer, because I did feel when I lived in New York, like it's so encompassing, like, you know, like I was at the hotel here where I'm staying for the book tour, and like the guy at the front desk checking me in is also a writer who's like applied to McDowell, and was like, and I was like, oh shit, that's cool. But he's like, there's so many people you meet around here who are like, they know the writing world and like these little intricacies, and they like, who's your agent and who's your this and that, and you like, it's like this kind of gamesmanship going on. Whereas in Miami, like nobody gives a fuck. Like, you know, like my neighbors, we, some of them know I'm a writer, and like, but we don't ever talk about it, you know. And I love that about the city, because I feel like it keeps me really grounded in like what just normal day-to-day people are living. And that's the type of like fiction that I want to write. Like I want to write something that someone who doesn't go online all the time can read it and still enjoy it, you know, but also someone who is would get something different from it. And so that's something I set out to do with Victim, and I think having that a little bit detached perspective helped me to try to accomplish that.
So I mean, let's talk a little bit about first you're back home, you know, you came back to New York, you're in the Bronx last night at Lit Bar, you're gonna be at Bookstore Magic tonight. What's it like coming back home after having written a novel that, I don't know, that really features both the Bronx and Brooklyn has a little side part in it, but so what's it like being back here now?
It's been pretty cool, man. It's a different experience. I'm staying in like a hotel in New York. I've never done that before. Yeah. You know, I would just go back to my old apartment in the Bronx and like kind of stay in the Bronx. So it's different, like being in Manhattan and like, I don't know, having a Manhattan life for like a couple days and like going into bookstores and signing the book and this author life. So it's cool. It's something that I'm happy that it's like a brief thing. I still like my life in Miami. I'm very much like a dad and like have a day job and like do my writing in the morning and like don't really think about the other stuff. And like, I feel like that's healthier for my ego and my process and everything. But it's also been interesting that like I snap back in, you know, like I rode the subway and it's just like, there's like New York Andrew, you know, because I was here for so long that you kind of forget that there's this like other version of you. You know, I've lived in Miami 8 years now, so it's been interesting to just kind of also see like, all right, like I still remember how to move in the city and like how to, you know, how to get around and whatever. So it's been pretty fun, but it's been a different perspective because I haven't even, aside from the Lit Bar last night, which was amazing, like I haven't even been to the Bronx this time, which is different. I usually just stay there. So, but I'm trying to embrace it and enjoy the like different perspective on the city. I don't usually get this one.
Yeah. How is Miami Andrew different from New York Andrew?
That's a good question, man. Miami Andrew is probably more laid back. I don't know, like Miami's just, it's just slower, you know? The lifestyle's slower. The people you're in contact with are just, like I was saying before, like so dialed out of these big cultural issues. They're just like, you know, you talk about like baseball and like the Dolphins, and, like your kids, you know? I don't know. Miami Andrew is sort of more detached from like the literary world, whereas here I feel, especially, I mean, I'm on book tour, so I'm doing a lot of literary things, but there's more of the like, it's just all around you. There's so many bookstores when you're in the city, you know, there's so many writers who live here, so many events. Whereas in Miami, I just kind of focus on like day-to-day life a lot more. Yeah.
What do you miss most about New York when you're over in Miami?
The people. I miss my people in New York. I don't really miss living here, but I miss like the people that I grew up with, like the people at the Lit Bar last night, like friends. I have teachers there. I had like my old track coach, like people who were, you know, these people who shaped me and raised me. Mm-hmm. And so I miss them the most because they're like such, New York people are just very unique people, you know, especially like Bronx people who are, you know, the people I came up with. So that's about the only thing I really miss in the city. I always say if I could transplant all my people to Miami, I'd be complete, you know.
But if they went to Miami, then like life is too nice there because it's warm.
They'd be different.
They wouldn't have the same personality, exactly. The same, because like being in the cold, being you know, it brings, makes you, it builds up your character.
You just feel like, I don't know, not angrier, but like there's just an edge to you being here that like in Miami I don't have at all. It's just like I wake up and it's sunny, you know, like the days all like look the same kind of, and I don't know, the humor here is so different, everyone's so much more blunt, you know, and but I love that. I love that about the city.
But what's something that would surprise us about Miami people?
You know, they're actually like, I feel like they're quite warm people, you know. I found some really kind people in Miami, and like they'll help you even if there's nothing to gain from it, you know? Like, they'll hang out with you even if there's nothing to gain from it. Like, I would... It's one of the things I didn't like about living in New York sometimes. Like, I'd go to places or hang out with people, and it's like, we're trying to, like, okay, you have this connection, I have this connection, you're going to help me, I'm going to help you, or I'm going to try to get you to help me. There's kind of this, like, game going on. And in Miami, it's like, if they're going to hang out with you, it's because they like you,
yeah,
you know? And, like, they don't really care what you do. It'll probably yeah, never come up. Like, I hang out with people. I have friends in Miami who hang out all the time. We never talk. I don't even really know what they do, you know? Wow. And they don't really know what I do. Like, it just never comes up, you know? And, like, I love that because it's like Steven the person, we're hanging out. It's not like, you know, okay, I know you work for this magazine, I'm trying to write for them, so, like, I'm going to hang out with you, and then maybe you're going to invite me here, you know? Like, that happens so much in New York, and, like, yeah, Miami, that never happens, and I love that about the city, though.
That's a whole other world.
It's another world.
You can only imagine. But, okay, so you said something last night at the Lip Bar. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I believe it. You said you wake up at 5 yeah, to write until 7.
Yeah.
And you have to take care of your kids, you have your day job. Are you really writing, like, at the crack of dawn for 2 hours every day?
I do. I get up at 5. Yeah, I get up at 5, make my coffee. Sometimes I drink, like, pre-workout. Okay. Like, that just, like, hits you faster. And I write, man. Yeah. Like, that's, you know. Like, the last couple months, I haven't been able to do it because of the promotion. So I still get up, but I'm doing, like, emails or, like, writing an Instagram post or whatever I'm going to share later, or just responding to a Q&A or something. But but like, that's my time, man. That's like, to me, it's like sacred time. Like, I get up, write, maybe try to squeeze a little workout in the gym downstairs, you know. But that's like, that's, I do that Monday through Friday. Like, it's so automatic that I wake up kind of really early for no reason now. Like, I'm here without my kids and I'm still waking up way too early, and I'm like, I should just be sleeping in, but my body is so accustomed to it that, yeah, I'm a morning person. I've always been a morning person. Yeah, my wife hates that. She's like, not a morning person, but I feel clearer, and, like, you know, and like I said last night, it's just, there's nobody gonna bother you at 5 a.m. There's nothing, no one's texting you, no one's emailing you, like, so for me, it's like the best time.
Yeah, I thought about trying it after you said it. I was like, yeah, no.
It's not for everybody.
No, it's not for
everybody.
Me.
And I totally get that. There's some people who could do the night owl thing. And I tried doing the night owl stuff. It's just whatever I wrote was shit. Like, it just never worked, you know? So whatever, if you could do the night owl thing, that's cool. But I do think if you're trying to, like, as a writer, you know, like, you need to block out at least an hour or two where you're just, like, pulled away from the world and, like...
Yeah.
Sitting there, even if you just read, or you, like, read an article that is, like, maybe might inspire you, I don't know, write two sentences. And sometimes I just fuck around too. Sometimes I'm sitting there and I, like, still look at Twitter or something, and I, like, and I get mad at myself, I wasted my time, but I showed up, you know what I mean? I think the important part is just showing up.
So before we wrap things up, what do you want to see in literature, in new books coming out? What do you think needs to be explored that hasn't really been yet?
I mean, I want to see, I guess, I don't know, I think a lot about it from, like, the writers of color perspective, you know, like, because I feel like there is already a lot of nuance in, like, white writers, you know, they can do all types of interesting, weird stuff, and it's like, they're always hailed, not always, but you know what I mean, like, they get that attention, and for writers of color, I want to see us, like, feel like we could take those same risks and, like, write these, like, whatever nuanced story that we feel is most, like, powerful to us, whether or not it's, like, gonna line up with whatever someone thinks is a black story or a Latino story or, like, you know, or whatever story, like, and I feel like there is that happening, you know. I think that a lot of us collectively are, like, over the whole, like, wave, you know, that I was writing about in this book, and it's like, I hope that there's going to be sort of, I don't know, more interesting stories being told. I think it happens a lot in TV already, you know. Like, This Fool is a great show. They got canceled on Hulu, but that was a great show. The Vince Staples show I was watching the other day was also interesting. Like, Atlanta, you have, like, really interesting shows featuring, like, characters of color, marginalized characters, but like they're not, they're like, I don't know, they're interesting. They're not trying to tell these like kind of flat stories, you know. I want more stories where like the fact that the character is a person of color is like the least important thing about the book, you know. Like it's just an interesting book, and they happen to be wherever, from wherever, you know, from whatever background, like, because to me that's like true diversity, you know what I mean? To me, like, that's like a real representation of like various aspects of an individual's life, whether they be from whatever background.
Yeah. So if you do want such a nuanced work of literature, you should pick up Victim, which is now available. And they can follow you Instagram, Twitter. We'll link to all your accounts. But I'm happy we're able to do this, because you sent me. When did you first reach out? Was it over the summer, last spring?
Like last summer or something.
Yeah.
I listened to a podcast you did. I can't remember if it was the Junot one or I don't remember, but I listened to your podcast. I started reading your stuff, and I was like, I feel like you would really like this. So,
and I did.
I'm glad we made this happen, man.
Yeah. So no, but thank you, Andrew, for coming on.
Of course, it's an honor, man. Thank you.